You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. So in this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Kim Spangler, and she shares with us the story of her self-discovery and transformation, which begins with the fact that she describes the first 39 years of her life as feeling like she wasn't measuring up, only to have a really pivotal revelation right about that time with an ADHD diagnosis. So this conversation goes through some insightful moments, shifting perspectives, her deep dive into her own personal research and discovery, and then the profound relief that came with understanding herself better. And because this is my show, and I tend to love the random sidetrack in a conversation, we do also talk about allergy season, nostalgic, perhaps slightly inappropriate children's books, and a love for chocolate. So are you ready? I'm ready. Let's do this. Kim Spangler, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am.
Yay, let's do it. All right. I start most of my interviews by asking people where they call home. Where are you talking to me from today?
I am in Texas. I live just outside of Houston.
Just outside of Houston. All right. Very good. So you mentioned this before we got started. You guys are hitting allergy season, ragweed extraordinaire where you live.
Yes. It's everything is covered in green and you can't walk outside without just stuff flying in your face. It's fun.
I complain about the allergies where I live. We get oak trees and mango trees that pollinate. But the videos of the big pine trees getting shaken for the pollen in Texas makes my little body just itchy all over. That looks horrific.
Yeah. You know, I did not ever have any sort of allergy issues until we moved into the house that we live in now, which was almost 11 years ago, and our yard is covered. We have 2 acres and they're just covered in pine trees. So you mentioned the pine trees. I think that is my bane because it's the only thing I've never lived around until now. And every year I'm just shocked by like, why am I so stuffy? Why do I have headaches? And yeah,
that's it. That's the reason. There you go. All right. So in a second, we're going to talk about the topic of the day. But first I want to ask you something unrelated. Even more unrelated than allergies. Tell the audience a little bit about you, what things you do for a hobby or a passion or a pastime, something that'll help us get to know you.
I will tell you my favorite pastime, and it will peg me as a huge nerd right from the start, but that's good for everyone to know. D&D. I play Dungeons and Dragons in my every spare bit. I have 3 kids, so I don't have a lot of spare time, but all the spare time I can find, I enjoy playing D&D.
There you go. I get it. All right. Very good. And now to the topic of the day, you propose the topic of, now this is how you describe it. I'm going to use your words. You say that you spent the first 39 years of your life feeling like you sucked at life. And then we're going to talk about how you turned that around. Does that sound like a good topic to talk about today?
I think it's an important one.
Let's do it. All right. So let's begin by rolling back the clock a little bit. Tell us what you were like as a kid, like when you were in elementary school. What were some things you liked to do? What did you like in school? Were you doing well in school? All those things like that.
I guess I'm like a lifelong one-trick pony because the only thing I did when I was little was read. I read obsessively. It was, if I was going on a car ride, I would bring 3 books like Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley Twins,
yeah.
I think, when I was little. Boxcar Kids, that sort of thing. I would have, you know, like little youth books this big, and I would bring 3 of them to go 15 minutes down the road because, God, I could not be without a book for, you know, 3 minutes. I was quiet. I was shy. I was silly.
Okay.
Like, just being silly was my favorite thing. I did well in school because I didn't have a hard time with absorbing things, and especially from reading. Like if you gave me a book with information in it, I could read it and then not really have to pay too much attention in class.
Yeah.
And so I happened to just kind of be naturally inclined to reading and writing, and that That came in really handy for getting through all stages of school, so until
Yes.
college, but we can talk about that later.
Reading is so unrelated question that wasn't on my list of questions to ask you. You mentioned that you have three kids. Have you gone back by any chance and read The Boxcar Kids with your kids?
I have not.
Okay, so I did not read The Boxcar Kids when I was a kid, but my mother-in-law gave them to us for my kids. It is a wild thing because the stories are still good, right? The books are good and so on and so forth, but they were written at a completely different time. Completely different time. And the concept, just the concept overall. So I was reading them with my kids and I was like, wait a minute, these are children who are living on their own. And I'm like, what kind of horror story is this? But it's just presented as these kids on this adventure. I'm like, this is, I don't know. I mean, my kids did not pick up on it, but that versus like Magic School Bus kind of story with kids, it's like two totally different generations. And the thing that's nice about the Boxcar Kids is there's like a million of them. It's like that's from the time when we wrote series for kids where there would be a bunch. So like Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, Boxcar, you're not going to run out. You can go to the library every other day and pick up four or five of those. But I encourage you to just pick one up like the next time you're at a library and read it and see if your brain is like, whoa, why did anybody give this to me as a child?
I will have to do that because now that you're saying that, I'm like, yeah, that's probably is going to hit different as a parent.
Right. The story, the basis of the story is a group of three or four kids who are living by themselves in an abandoned boxcar, which would not be classified as like healthy children's lit in 2025. I don't think. I think if you wrote it now, it'd be a totally different category. All right. So, and also bizarre in those books. So the kids who are living in the boxcar, when you read them as an adult, they interact with all these other adults who don't like go and get them out of the boxcar. Like they just like all these other adults in the story just know that they're it's like,
Yeah, they're just.
I don't know
Oh, look, it's some kids living in a boxcar. That's normal.
how that's totally normal. Exactly. Okay, so I'm off track. So you liked school, you liked reading. I did not know what you were gonna answer to that, but it does tie in to the story of this and what we're gonna talk about today. Tell me, more about the idea that you sucked at life. Like, what do you mean when you say that?
I was, and still am a lot of the time, just kind of disorganized, messy, like on the outside and in my brain. I could never get anywhere on time. I couldn't get up on time. I couldn't go to sleep on time. I could not, if I was, listening to a conversation of a lot of people and there was, bright lights or just a cacophonous amount of sound. I could not focus on things. Really, I had a lot of, and this is like a lot when I was younger was more of an issue. I had a lot of sensitivities. Like I couldn't stand, I could never wear turtlenecks because the feeling around my neck would, like I just felt like I was going to throw up at any time. And I'm sorry if that, I know that's a terrible, thing that nobody wants to hear about.
I think that's very normal with turtlenecks. I believe you that there are people out there that don't feel that way, but I share your. I mean, I live in a warm place, so I never have to wear a turtleneck. It feels weird to
Yeah,
me.
I mean I'm in Texas, so I don't know why I would have ever needed to, but I had texture sensitivities as far as food. I was a super picky eater as a kid. And still to this day there are some things that I just cannot stand the texture of. Onions is in particular, which is hard because I live in Texas and there's onions in almost everything here. And Mexican food, Tex-Mex is great and there's always a lot of onions, but I digress. I'm sorry. One second. I'm gonna get a
So for onions, I have a very close friend who doesn't like onions. He's very picky and outspoken about it. Is it all onions? Like, so if they're pureed in like a soup or something, do you notice them, or is it just like raw onions or chunks of onion?
It's more of the chunks. Now, if I can
Yeah.
taste just like a raw onion taste, like okay, so Whataburger is our, we love Whataburger here. And if sometimes you go and you get a Whataburger, and I don't get any veggies on mine, but every now and then there'll just be like a stray piece of onion that makes it in. And if I hit a bite with a raw onion in it, I'm done. I can't eat anymore.
All right,
But
so that gives us more definition and background on the onion situation.
yeah,
If anybody
it's.
has friends who are sensitive to onions, it is the people are opinionated. I also have a family member who's like that with tomatoes. I think tomatoes are fabulous, and they think they're horrible. It's people come in different flavors. So, struggled to get places on time. Struggled to keep to schedules. Felt had the perception that other people saw you as disorganized, feeling disorganized in
Yes.
your brain. And so what else?
As I got older, it kind of got worse and got harder to manage because, the older you get, the more responsibilities are piled on you. And so I just felt like a person who, like I didn't have my, can I cuss on
Yeah, you can. You
Okay.
can.
I did not have my shit together. Like that was, I was just the epitome of the hot mess.
Okay.
Just, like laundry lived in the washer or the dryer. It did not, or a laundry basket. If I got really, motivated on a particular day, I could not just household general daily upkeep of like having to live and be a person and an adult, especially when I got to that age, like it's a lot. And you don't, most people don't stop to have to think about like, oh, I need to get up and I need to brush my teeth and take a shower and I need to eat breakfast and I need to make a lunch for, to go to work. And then after work, I have to stop and do these chores on the way home and then come home and, do the things that you have to do to maintain your house. And it was an overwhelming amount of things just to like live and be an adult.
And so you had the perception that you were sucking at this. So I want to dig a little deeper into this because you and I are using slightly different words, and that's on purpose because I knew this question was coming. Okay, right? Because you lived it, and I'm asking about it, right? I'm fascinated by the impact here on the ideas of comparison and self-judgment and awareness and other people's perceptions, right? So you lived this, but where, let's talk about where those feelings of not measuring up and judgment might have been and failure. Where were they coming from? Like, what was, where, like, tell us a little bit more about how that felt because, just let's talk about that. Like, where it came from, like, why wasn't it okay to be late? Like, why was it a problem that the laundry was in the washing machine? Like, where did the sensation come from of not measuring up versus this is okay, this is how I am?
So a lot of it was self-measurement against my peers.
Okay.
And of course, some of it was judgment from outside of, people that were like, oh, I mean, why don't you just set your alarm earlier? Like, why don't you, or the, the expression on someone's face or the subtle or an eye, oh, Kim's late again. Kim forgot the thing again. Kim, like, working memory is not my and has never been my strong suit. Like I said earlier, reading and writing, great. Remembering things, no.
Okay, so like reading for entertainment, good. Reading for memorization and spitting back out, maybe not. You felt like you were experiencing self-judgment, comparing yourself to how you saw other people functioning in the world, and then you were experiencing real life feedback that felt like criticism in how you were showing up.
Yes,
Okay, that's
often.
me paraphrasing what you shared with us. So I want to make sure that I'm not putting words in your mouth because I don't want to do that. All right, so very good. So thank you for sharing that because I think that there's a lot of overlap between. So like I live in Miami. We run on a different clock in Miami. No one is ever gonna like it's a whole thing. I was once invited to a wedding that started at 7. The woman called me and she's like, "We're not even gonna be there till 9:30." Like late has an entirely different concept in Miami. So like it's a difference of how things show up. And so I wanted to give you that because when you have like a skill set that sometimes is fine and sometimes is a symptom of something that can be addressed and treated. You can run into people like you were talking about the turtleneck. Like I'm also irritated by turtlenecks and scarves, but that doesn't always mean that something is wrong. Sometimes it just means we don't like turtlenecks or onions. So that's the reason I wanted to ask. All right, you say that this was the first 39 years of your life. because I got to read your submission and I know the answer to this. Share with the audience what happened right around the time you turned 40 that mixed this up.
Well, I will jump to the end and then we can kind of back up a little bit as to how
There
I
you go.
got there. But I was diagnosed with ADHD.
Okay.
And that was kind of, even now, it's kind of like, it was a really big moment. Maybe the biggest, and I've, well, hopefully my kids won't listen to this, but it was maybe the biggest moment in my life because it changed so much about, not necessarily about how I live, but about how I view myself and how I was able to, how I have been able to deal with myself and work with myself.
Very good. All right, so let's do walk this cat back. Let's figure out how you got to this. So the pivot is when you get a diagnosis, right? So what happens that kicks off this discovery process? Like, what's the first thing that sends you on any sort of research or diagnostic mission about this process?
Well, for a lot of women who are late diagnosed, it is our kids.
Okay.
And that was the case for me. My oldest was in fourth grade in public school and had been struggling for a while with being able to focus, just being able to stay on task, be, present, and even, sitting at the kitchen table doing schoolwork, or homework after school because they, fourth grade, you need homework, obviously. You
I
could be
mean, yeah. So,
pointing and
did we
talking to
not have
her.
homework? It's like, did we not have homework? I don't remember having homework. I mean,
I
maybe
don't
I do.
remember having homework in fourth grade. I remember wanting homework in fourth grade because that's, that
I
seemed like
don't
a cool thing to
remember.
do.
We could have had homework, and I've totally blocked it from my mind. I mean, we didn't go to school together, but I'm saying our oldest. But one of the reasons I asked you about your elementary school experience is that there is a perception that this is where this shows up, and you're saying that with your kids. It was their abilities in school that was a highlighting thing for you, which is different from your school experience because in elementary school at that same age, you were doing fine.
Yes.
All right. So yeah. So your kids are struggling in school and not just because school can be really, really boring. Okay.
And it can be.
It
Oh, it
can
can be.
be. It can
Especially
be.
if you don't like sitting in a classroom and just being talked to for long periods of time,
I
which,
introduced me to the fourth grader who does like that
Yeah.
and right.
I think actually that was kind of me, but mostly I liked to zone out from what the teacher was saying and read. It was a nice long period where I could sit with a book in my lap and so maybe it wasn't necessarily the classroom experience I liked.
Yeah, I don't know. So very good. So yeah, so how does
So
it, so you get this report, so you're getting these reports from your teachers, your children's teacher.
yes. You start getting these reports and it's repeated. It's every parent teacher meeting, it's every report card and she my oldest she hated school, so it was not a fun experience for her. She didn't have really much of anything she enjoyed about it, and so the more we got this feedback, I started researching, and I am like a Google master. I've done search engine optimization marketing for, I mean, at that point it was 8 or 9 years, so Google was my life. So I turned to Google and start digging into information. And the more I read, just, little bells start going off. Because what I started finding was that ADHD shows up in a million different ways. That is not just when I was a kid, it was a hyperactive little voice,
Hyperactive,
and
yeah.
that's still the a very predominant feeling among the just society in general, that if you think of ADHD, that's what you think of. But it is also the daydreaming little girl who can't focus, or her maybe just talks too much, or talks, if you're listening to this audio, you can't hear, like, quote unquote, talks too much, that
Right.
interrupts, that is just super excited, that doodles a lot, that fidgets a lot. And just as I started reading, I started recognizing There are so many different, there's a lot of different symptoms, and they can all manifest differently, and they can all manifest at different levels for every single person. So, whereas one person might have, three symptoms that are up here and other symptoms that are over here, the other person might be the complete opposite. So they look completely different. They
Right.
behave differently. The things they are good at or not good at or struggle with, don't struggle with, can be completely different, but they both have ADHD.
So what's happening in your life at this time is you're reading these symptoms, and these stories as you're doing your self research on Dr. Google, and you're reading them with the first line of research being for your child who's struggling, and it's hitting a familiar note. You're like, wow, I have a lot of this also. So how do you jump from, so first of all, does your, because ADHD is something that pediatricians and schools seem like hardwired to look for, but how do you jump from your kid to you? Because unless you guys go to the same doctor.
No, so this was all just me reading endless articles and blogs and Reddit threads, which is not where you should get your medical information, but it is a great place to go to find the experiences of other people.
Right, which that's one of the tenets of like my of this what I do, which is that like I believe that the experience stories, they don't trump medical information or professional advice, but they also should not be ignored. Because like how somebody experiences something, which is what you were saying, that's sometimes super helpful to hear. It's like one person has one experience and they match the list, and the other person is like, hey, that's not what it looked like for me. This is what it was. And that sometimes can be even more helpful than a lot of other things.
Absolutely. Especially with something that, I mean, our understanding of ADHD is evolving by the moment.
Yeah.
And it has changed so significantly in the past 20 years, 30 years, that there are an alarming number of medical professionals out there that don't know. They don't know what the current thinking is and the current research is showing. And so they dismiss people. And
Right.
so you have to have access to people out there who are experiencing the same things, and if you're lucky, people who are experiencing the same things and have gone to a medical professional who knows
Right. Well, ADHD is one of these things that totally entertains me, right? Because I don't think there's many doctors, older doctors, who were struggling to pay attention in early education. That's not the person who chooses to go to medical school in most cases, right? Like it's like you can like divide an elementary school classroom with the 6-year-old who's like, I'm going to be a surgeon, and the kid across the room who's like, I'm going to play with fire trucks, It's a very early divide. And so fast forward 35 years, right? Asking the guy who never experienced it, to explain to you what it's like to live with something they never had seems like a disconnect, but that is what we do in like a thousand different things. This is just one of them. It's like, oh, okay, continue, person who's never had
100%.
ADHD, to tell me what it's like. Continue, geriatric man, to tell me what it's like to be a young woman. Go on. Let's do that. Yes.
Yes, please. I
No.
100%. And I mean, don't get me, like, women's dealing with medical issues as a woman is even worse, much less something that is hard to get people to pay attention to,
Well,
like.
and the other thing we do that is so funny is as adults, and we do this across the board, not just doctors, it's like we talk to children as if we know what they're experiencing in a totally different generation, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, it's like being aware of that gap is hard, but I think that when you're talking about hitting Reddit for experiential stories, that's where that fills the gap. Finding somebody else who's walked a path similar to yours and had a similar thing can be a really important bridge between confusion and clarity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it is also why I think that, I mean, there's been a lot of, oh, don't diagnose yourself with TikTok videos. And, the number of people being diagnosed with ADHD, particularly adults, has soared in recent
Yeah.
years, especially since COVID. COVID, everybody lost all of their structure and all of their coping mechanisms that they'd spent a lifetime building up and just fell apart and went, oh my God, what is wrong with me? That's not something suddenly newly wrong with you. It's just that you lost everything that you had put in place to keep yourself on track.
Yeah. No,
And
wait, there's another interview. It's not out yet. today, as we're recording this out soon, there's another person who talks directly about being helping to facilitate her professional team with a diagnosis. She's like, by TikTok, she's like, that's not how you're supposed to do it. She's like, but at the same time, that is where it was. And I think that's fair. I want to validate that and like reduce any stigma of people doing it. Like, probably you don't want to like hire a surgeon off of TikTok,
No,
but
but
yeah.
certainly the experience thing that that we're talking about here, that's you if you live in, especially I grew up in a small town, there were 4,000 people in the town that I grew up in. That's not a huge percentage. What is the likelihood that I was going to run into another girl with ADHD with similar symptoms that had happened to be diagnosed, that I might be able to go, oh, well, that's like me. I see myself in this. Maybe I should look at this. No. But you get on TikTok with 14 billion other people, and so many of them are sharing their stories. And oh, I'm sorry, my I have a oh my goodness,
What happened? Where did you go? There you
I'm so
are.
sorry.
There you are.
I had an alarm going that, oh yes, alarms, reminders, that is a large part of my coping mechanisms. So I had one going off and I tried to turn it off and accidentally turned off a video. Sorry about
No worries. All right, so
that.
you get
So.
the so we got off track. We were talking about TikTok and Reddit. So you're doing this research for you at this point, not just your, or you're just generally doing the research.
Just generally, it started with for my daughter, and then of course, the not being able to pay attention and focus in school was one thing, and then I learned a lot of other things that I was like, oh, that can be a sign of ADHD as well, things like emotional dysregulation. But as it just kind of evolved into researching it for her, for me, for her younger sister, who is more hyperactive but didn't struggle with paying attention in school. And so I thought, oh, well, she's doing fine in school. So it didn't occur to me that even though she presents more stereotypically as like a hyperactive kid, even after I started researching, it took a long time for me to go, oh wait, there are all sorts of different signs here too. They're just different from the ones that I see for me or for her big sister. So ADHD is there's a highly genetic component, and so if you have it, or if you have a sibling or a parent or a cousin, and you start saying, this is my, like, not medical advice because I am not a doctor, but if you have it in your family and you see or hear things that resonate with you, odds are pretty good because it runs through families.
So how do you transfer? So did you and your older daughter go through this journey roughly at the same time? And how did you transfer from research online to treatment?
So it took a while for me to get to the point where I was convinced enough to want to put, the kids through going through, because it's kind of a process, like there's a lot of testing and you have to sit down with a doctor and talk about your brain and all sorts of stuff. So it can be a little, it was intimidating for me and I was 39. So, but it started with, when I got to that point, just going to insurance, and luckily we had insurance at the time and covered testing because otherwise it can be pretty expensive. So I took the kids. Actually, I'm sorry, I'm getting that backwards. I did it myself first, because I was a little iffy on, not sure what I was going to be getting them into. And so I thought, well, okay, you know what? I'm pretty sure, just based on everything I've learned, that I have it. It took a year to get to the point where I was not just giving myself not excuses, but it was more back to the self-criticism thing of like, no, I probably there's this was probably not ADHD. I just suck at things. Like, this is just me. This is just my brain. It's not,
And
there's not
so,
some reason. It's just a personality flaw.
okay. So a year before you sought treatment,
A
and
year.
you went after treatment for yourself first. And I think that what you said, to mirror back your own words to you, is that you were iffy on putting them through the screening process. So let's talk a little bit about that. Why would you be iffy? Like if this had been a sore throat or an earache, you might not have been iffy. If it had been a stomach ache that somebody said this is an appendicitis, you probably would not have delayed searching for treatment. So when you were doing this research and seeing all these things, what was it about the idea of ADHD that made you so iffy in pursuing treatment?
Because, I mean, goes back to a lot of the things that I was learning and hearing about other people's experiences, and that a lot of people go through the process and then end up just being told, just being dismissed, or
Okay.
being told like, no, we're not even going to do the testing. You don't need the testing. You're fine. And it can be a heartbreaking, I mean, to feel like you need to be heard, and that there is something going on and no one is listening, especially doctors who are supposed to know what they're talking about. And having seen and heard many horror stories at that point of the type of doctors that we were talking about earlier,
Yeah.
that are not current on what we now know about ADHD, or
Or
that
good
just don't
listeners.
listen.
Yeah, they're
Yeah.
not good listeners. So how long, can I ask how long ago this was? How many years ago this was?
Let's see what how
We're
old am I? Is it's
2025.
been it's been I 3 years,
3 years. Okay.
almost 4 years.
Because I do have a sensation, I don't have ADHD, and so I haven't gone through this process, but I have this personal sensation that some parts of this have been sort of facilitated. There are ways to go through this and sort of circumvent some of the hardship to getting access to treatment in 2024 and 2025. It's like we have all these like online doctors now that it's like just talk to a very receptive doctor that you will never actually meet online, and we will happily mail order you these things that used to be hard to get. So,
So it's
and I
that
haven't
I
gone through
think
that with
that.
ADHD, but like with like dermatological like creams, like so like I used to have to go to the dermatologist, see them in person, order it through the prescription. Now it's like sign up online, happily they mail order me this stuff. I'm like easy peasy. I'm happy for me, but I don't know why it's so much easier than it was 5 years ago.
There was a lot. Especially in the few years after COVID, there were, and in fact, I did do the my diagnosis was done through an online doctor. They
Okay.
still did. There was still pretty extensive, like forms. I had to go get my parents still to fill out a form about me for when I was younger,
Really, at
right?
39, they were like,
At
go ask your
39,
parents. But I guess that's the
at
first question I
39.
asked you too, though. I didn't ask your parents, though. I just took your word for
I appreciate that. Although I'm sure my dad would have been happy to get on here and talk.
Let me tell you what Kim was like as a kid. I've got stories.
So it was definitely easier, I think, after COVID to do things online, but they've been kind of cracking down on that in the past year or two,
Okay.
and so it's not as accessible online as it was.
Oh, as it
And
was,
some
I'm
of that
hoping
is
that doesn't
depending on your
happen to my, like,
state.
yeah. Hoping that
But
doesn't happen to
also,
my dermatology process. I do still go to the dermatologist. I just like, she charges me much more for my.
I think some of that has to do with the class of medications that are used to treat ADHD.
Fair enough.
But in fact, I know that a lot of it has to do with that.
That
But
makes a lot of
it's.
sense. I mean, to be fair, like my like moisturizer and sunscreen, I think are less risky, but
But also very important.
important, right? Important. But okay, so when you got the diagnosis through your doctor, you jump through the hoops, you drag your family in, you ask your dad to fill out the questionnaire about young Kim. You go through the hoops. When it was confirmed by somebody who went to med school and calls themselves an MD, how did you feel?
Oh, the first thing I did was just cried.
Okay, so cry from relief.
I was almost an indescribable wave of emotions that I did not expect, by the way, and was it was, you know, it felt embarrassing at the moment, like, oh God, why am I crying? This is ridiculous. But in retrospect, it was not at all ridiculous. It was affirming, first of all. And yes, it was a huge relief because knowing there is so much to be gained by knowing. There's you you have almost no hope of fixing something if you can't even identify what you need help with. And so just knowing, having a jumping off place to go with, like, okay, yes, this is the thing. So now I need to figure it out. That's,
Very good. And
I think that.
then, so what kind of treatment did you embark on for yourself? Like, what kind of treatment did you embark on, and what did you immediately notice as change in your life as a part of that?
So the my doctor prescribed me Adderall to start with, and I was incredibly lucky in that it worked very effectively for me right out of the gate. It was, started with a low dose, and I noticed immediately a difference. And I will, that is, I said earlier that my memory is terrible. I think that that is a day that will never be forgotten, because it is the first time in my life that I remember it just being quiet inside my head.
Yeah, so that is the way, like I said, I've said a couple of times, I have not actually experienced it, but that is how people describe it. And I think that the only thing that I'll weigh in here as a validation is somebody who is asking for the story and listening to the story for other people who may be listening and maybe you're not experiencing it. I find it very interesting. I just believe it, is what I'm going to say. I just believe what people tell me, even though I haven't experienced it, because there is. It's not something I can understand, having not actually gone through it. But I just sit in a space of believing people that, it's such a profound change. I don't even, as somebody who doesn't experience it, I can honestly say I'm not aware of the quiet in my brain, is sort of where it is on the other side, if that makes any sense, right? It's not something I paid attention to. And so, but I am appreciative of the fact that. That must be amazing. I liken it to sort of how when you're in a place that is like a conference hall, like you're in a trade show and you're in an expo, and then you step into the elevator or something like that, and it's quiet for the first time. You've adjusted to the noise in the noisy place, and then you realize that it's quiet. I think that must be what it's like.
Absolutely. That
Yeah.
is an incredibly accurate description. And that's, I know you, like you said, you can't, like, you don't really think about the quiet in your head. I
Right.
didn't really think about the noise in my head.
But
I
you'd
mean,
never not had it.
I had never not had it. And it's, I mean, it was an insomniac my whole life, because when I lay down to go to bed at night, I've got 47 different things going through my brain, and it doesn't matter how exhausted I am. I didn't, I was, I had to start having kids before I could, excuse me, go to sleep at night. And that was just the
Exhaustion.
exhaustion of being a parent, and having a, having a baby waking you up every few hours. So,
That's the change. Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. All right. So now it's so you have this amazing experience, which is the quiet, the noise goes away in your head when you take the medicine. And then so Adderall works, and like you said, it is a pretty serious medicine. What are some other things that changed as a result? So you before this, you described yourself as someone who sucked at life. So what are some of the things that changed as a result of being able to follow this treatment plan?
so something else that Adderall helped with, and aside from, like, quieting the noise, it helped with one, I mean, being able to maintain focus. Like, I could sit down at my computer and actually just work for a couple of hours straight without doing the, I mean, it's, the, ooh, squirrel. Like,
Right,
that's
the
the
distraction.
ADHD stereotype, but it's, that's what it feels like. And I could also stop and think, oh, there's a thing I should do. I'll just get up and go do that.
Okay.
There is a, so task initiation can be a very difficult thing. And for people with ADHD, we spend our lives being told and believing that we're just lazy. Like, you could do these things if you wanted to. And the first day I took the Adderall was the first time in my life I realized, like, no, that is a lie, because I've always wanted to do things. You sit there feeling weighed down by an invisible force, knowing and thinking and obsessing about getting up and going to do the thing, whatever the thing is. The dishes, going to get the gro you know, going to go to the grocery store, going to cook dinner, whatever it is. And it is a physical and mental sensation that you you cannot get yourself to go do it, no matter how much you might want to. And the first day I took the Adderall, there I got so many things done because I was just like, oh, I should do this thing. And before I could really even think about it, I was doing the thing and almost done with the thing because it probably took 5 minutes. It was, I mean, I'm not going to say that Adderall is a miracle drug, but that feeling alone was completely foreign to me.
Just, well, I think that it's fair for you to say that it felt miraculous for you. I don't think that that could be untrue.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so, like, I think that your experience of it felt miraculous. I think that's worthy of saying. All right. So very good. So is that still the course of treatment you're on? Like, so I'll ask you this. You mentioned before you're not a doctor, and that's totally fair, right? But for anybody who might be listening out there that is looking at this for sort of path of awareness of information for themselves, for their children, for their nieces, their nephews, their neighbor across the street, whatever it is, you like went through this diagnostic thing. The first thing they prescribed worked for you. Are you still on that course of treatment? It's still effective, or did you modify it? Like, what can you share with people that might be helpful for others looking at this path at an earlier state?
So I did go up in dose just really a little bit, but that was over the course of about I would say about 6 months, because started with a very low dose, and I mean our brains adapt very quickly, and so it took I went up just a little bit over about 6 months, and then I've been at a stable dose for I think two and a half years now. I did at some point I take the extended release in the morning, and I have a little instant release booster for the afternoon for some days, especially for women during our cycle. There are certain points during the cycle, like the week that you are on your period, you may feel like your medicine does not work at all.
Okay.
Because, and this is another reason why women often get late diagnosed, because
we blame everything on our hormones.
Yes, because it once again, lovely, lovely hormones screwing us every time.
And hormones are amazing things. Like, hormones are amazing things, and they're maybe a little confusing and misunderstood and all those things, all of them, But it is a funny thing about life as a woman that people are like, oh, you know what? This is because of your hormones. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it might be, but
it can't all be about hormones, but sometimes it really unfortunately is.
Sure.
And so, and it took me a really long time to figure out why just every now and then there was a full week where I just didn't feel like my medication was working anymore. And that was, that was during the week of my menstrual.
Yeah.
It's just.
And you talked about the impact of finding people on TikTok who talk about things. One of the things that's hilarious, and this podcast has taken a secondary course of throwing the Western medicine industry under the bus, but one of the things that is so hilarious is that there is no research on this for like a really, really long time, because there was no research on it. It's not like, it's like they just, the medical industry was like, we're just not going to ask women how they feel about it. Like, they just didn't test anything at all until like the late 1990s. And so there's a lot of like gaps in the information. It's like, we're going to test these products on people who don't experience this. And when I just think of that sometimes, and I'm like, okay, whose idea was that? Like, that seems like a bad plan, but it is nonetheless what happened. And so through that lens, right, you then have 10 years ago when we sort of started this whole revelation, like, oh my gosh, maybe these adults have ADHD too. You then had millions of women taking a medication that was never tested on them, reporting symptoms that did, they're just reporting symptoms into the void. People were like, no, that, well, maybe, but we don't know why. That must have been really frustrating. And so any young ladies out there listening, go to medical school and do medical testing on women for the rest of us.
Yes.
All right. So now
there is definitely more research being done now. And there are, I was reading just recently, there was an article in, I think, Scientific American that was on women doing women specific ADHD research and trying to get more of it done. So that is very exciting stuff.
I look forward to the day in the future where younger people can go through, like in the future that I like, it would be superb if, like, as a young person, you were able to take a test and they're like, hey, here's how your brain works and here's how we're going to do this. And you didn't have to go through living through and diagnosing based on the symptoms and the outcome. Like, I mean, wouldn't that be amazing?
Yes, that sounds like some Jetsons stuff, though, or
It
like Star
does, but
Trek. You
I'm not a
know, you
scientist
need
or a
like one of those
doctor,
little
so I can
scanner things that they can just, yeah,
exactly. I can dream that up.
somebody invent that.
Yeah, Rosie the robot should come in and do
Yes.
beep, 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 and tell us what's how we work. Same with
I have
nutrition,
a
right?
Roomba named Rosie, by the
Do you
way,
really?
which
We
is my
named
favorite thing.
ours. What did we name? He broke a long time ago. Oh, we named ours Bart, like after The Simpsons. But and he would go around and create havoc in the house. But he broke, and he's no longer with us. But yeah, the same with nutrition. Like, can you imagine if somebody was to like be able to look at you and be like, "Hey, this is how your body works today." Wouldn't that be great? Instead of spending, your lifetime being like, "Well, that person can eat that and works for them, but it doesn't seem to work for me." All right. Anyway, we're off track. Let's talk about you. In a second, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people about what you do, which is directly related to your experience, and tell them you've got a podcast. And so tell them about that.
Yes, so I have a podcast called ADHD Adultish, and surprisingly, even though you wouldn't be able to tell this by the name, we talk about adulting with ADHD and the difficulties. I talk about really a wide range of topics as far as ADHD in the experience goes, and a lot of it is I try to do a lot of like validation of people's experiences. I try to offer all of the tips and tricks that I can and examples of how to use them because, as mentioned before, everybody is different and what works for one person is not going to work for the next person. And so that is part of the challenge of being able to figure out how to work with your own particular flavor of ADHD. And I as far as how I coped with it, I started Adderall and that helped. And then I did a lot more research and eventually went to get certified to be an ADHD coach. And so that is part of the experience that I bring into the podcast as far as just sharing things that I have learned and continue to learn, things that have worked to help me or my kids or my clients. And I talk about D&D as well sometimes. And there's fair warning, there's the occasional F-bomb.
As there should be in your own show. All right, very good. So the ADHD Adultish podcast, I will put a link to that in the show notes. And the easiest way to get these links for anybody who's listening, if you're not already a part of the Imperfect Adulting email community, you sign up. I send it out every week, and then you just click on it, which is super good. Super good. Are you ready? I'm going to ask you three questions. These are just for fun.
Ooh. Okay,
No pressure.
okay, yeah, let's do
Like,
it.
yeah, like no pressure. All right. But do you have a favorite comedy movie? And if so, what is it?
Oh my, that is a very good question.
I broke it down into like genre because I think it's unfair to ask people their favorite movie because you can have one in every single section.
That's true. Favorite comedy movie. I am going to go with Liar Liar
Okay.
with
That's Jim
Jim
Carrey, right?
Carrey.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the 90s, early 2000s. I
That's a
don't know
good
exactly,
movie. That's a good movie.
but
I accept that as a I accept that as a contest. There's a million in the comedy section.
there's,
Like
yes.
you can have a lot. So picking one is hard. All right, very I that is a fun movie. That is a very fun. So what's a meal that you make for yourself when your kitchen is pretty empty? Something that you can whip up when you're out of pretty much everything. To avoid going to the store or avoid ordering takeout, what is the bottom of the barrel meal that you will fix for yourself?
You know, I am a big fan of just a good old-fashioned grilled cheese.
Okay. Got it. No, that works. You can almost always find the pieces for that. Very good. All right, very good. All right, so now what is a guilty pleasure that you indulge in for yourself that you're willing to tell us on the podcast?
Oh, let's not. Yeah. I don't. I really like dark chocolate.
Okay, what percentage
So.
chocolate? Because there's like a limit. Like there's, when you get up there to 80 and
Yes.
90, it's a little bitter.
Yes. So it, I would say I'm off the top of my head. I can't think of the exact, but it's, I want to say it's like 92 or 90%.
Oh,
I like
that's pretty
for
bitter.
real dark chocolate. Yeah.
That's very
If it
dark. All
has
right.
sea salt in it, even better.
Okay, very good. All right, okay. That is really dark chocolate. I love it. All right, that's it. Kim Spangler, thank you so much. You've been a wonderful guest on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.